Unit 3, City Solutions, pages 51 through 53. Lesson A, Reading. Track 1-5. Living on an Urban Planet. Consider this. In 1800, less than 3% of the world's population lived in cities. Only one city, Beijing, China, had a population of more than 1 million people. Most people lived in rural areas, and many spent their entire lives without ever seeing a city. In 1900, just 100 years later, roughly 150 million people lived in cities. By then, the world's 10 largest urban areas all had populations exceeding 1 million. London, the world's largest, had more than 6 million people. By 2000, the number of people living in cities had exceeded 3 billion, and in 2008, the world's population crossed a tipping point. More than one half of the people on Earth lived in cities. By 2050, that could increase to more than two-thirds. The trend is clear, and the conclusion inescapable. Humans have become an urban species. Cities as solutions? In the 19th and early 20th centuries, as large urban areas began to grow and spread, many people viewed cities largely in negative terms, as crowded, dirty, unhealthy environments that were breeding grounds for disease and crime. People feared that as cities got bigger, living conditions would get worse. Recent decades, however, have seen a widespread change in attitude toward urbanization. To a growing number of economists, urban planners, and environmentalists, urbanization is good news. Though negative aspects such as pollution and urban slums remain serious problems, many planners now believe big cities offer a solution to dealing with the problem of Earth's growing population. Harvard economist Edward Glaser is one person who believes that cities bring largely positive benefits. Glaser's optimism is reflected in the title of his book, The Triumph of the City. Glaser argues that poor people flock to cities because that's usually where the money is. Cities are productive because of the absence of space between people, which reduces the cost of transporting goods, people, and ideas. While the flow of goods has always been important to cities, what is most important today is the flow of ideas. Successful cities attract and reward smart people with higher wages, and they enable people to learn from one another. According to Glaser, a perfect example of how information can be exchanged in an urban environment is the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street. There, employees work in one open, crowded space sharing information. They value knowledge over space. That's what the modern city is all about. Another champion of urbanization is environmentalist Stuart Brand. From an ecological perspective, says Brand, moving people out of cities would be disastrous. Because cities are dense, they allow half of the world's population to live on about 4% of the land, leaving more space for open country, such as farmland. People living in cities also have less impact per capita on the environment. Their roads, sewers, and power lines are shorter and require fewer resources to build and operate. City apartments require less energy to heat, cool, and light than larger houses in suburbs and rural areas. Most importantly, people living in dense cities drive less. They can walk to many destinations, and public transportation is practical because enough people travel regularly to the same places. As a result, Dense cities tend to produce fewer greenhouse gas emissions per person than scattered, sprawling suburbs. Because of these reasons, it is a mistake to see urbanization as evil. Instead, we should view it as an inevitable part of development, says David Satterwhite of London's International Institute of Environment and Development. For Satterwhite and other urban planners, rapid growth itself is not the real problem. The larger issue is how to manage the growth. There is no one model for how to manage rapid urbanization, but there are hopeful examples. One is Seoul, South Korea. Seoul's success story. Between 1960 and 2000, Seoul's population increased from fewer than 3 million to 10 million people. In the same period, South Korea went from being one of the world's poorest countries, with a per capita GDP of less than $100, to being richer than some countries in Europe. How could this rapid urbanization produce such economic growth? Large numbers of people first began arriving in Seoul in the 1950s. The government soon recognized that economic development was essential for supporting its growing urban population. It began to invest capital in South Korean companies that made products that foreigners wanted to buy. At first, inexpensive clothing, and later, steel, electronics, and cars. This investment eventually helped large modern corporations such as Samsung and Hyundai to grow and develop. Central to South Korea's economic success were the men and women pouring into Seoul to work in its new factories. You can't understand urbanization in isolation from economic development, says economist Kyung-hwan Kim of Sogang University. The expanding city enabled economic growth, which paid for the buildings, roads, and other infrastructure that helped the city absorb even more people. Seoul today is one of the densest cities in the world. It has millions of cars, but it also has an excellent subway system. Overall, life has gotten much better for South Koreans during the past few decades of rapid urbanization. Life expectancy has increased from 51 years in 1961 to 79 years today. South Korea's transformation into a country with great economic power cannot be easily copied, but it proves that a poor country can urbanize successfully and incredibly fast. Managing urbanization. Despite success stories such as Seoul, urban planners around the world continue to struggle with the problem of how to manage urbanization. While they used to worry mainly about city density, the large number of people living closely together, urban planners today are increasingly focusing on urban sprawl, the way big cities are spreading out and taking over more and more land. Shlomo Angel, an urban planning professor at New York University and Princeton University, sees two main reasons for urban sprawl: rising incomes and cheaper transportation. When income rises, people have money to buy more space, he says. With cheaper transportation, people can afford to travel longer distances to work. In the second half of the 20th century, for example, many people in the United States moved from apartments in cities to houses in suburban areas, where they depend more on cars for transportation. This trend has led to expanding suburbs, which has led to greater energy use as well as increased air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. Today, many planners want to bring people back to cities and make suburbs denser by creating walkable town centers, high-rise apartment buildings, and more public transportation so people are less dependent on cars. It would be a lot better for the planet, says Edward Glaser, if people are in dense cities built around the elevator rather than in sprawling areas built around the car. Shlomo Angel believes that planning can make a big difference in the way cities are allowed to grow. However, good planning requires looking decades ahead, says Angel, and reserving land before the city grows over it for parks and public transportation space. It also requires, as in the example of Seoul, looking at growing cities in a positive way as concentrations of human energy. With the Earth's population headed toward 9 or 10 billion, dense and carefully planned cities are looking more like a solution, perhaps the best hope for lifting people out of poverty without wrecking the planet.